On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Chill and rainy outside here in the hills and hollers of almost level West Bicod, Virginia. But there's a roof, and a functioning one at that, over the front porch. So I think we'll have a... I think we'll have a Jim Dandy Friday on the front porch program. Hello. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. And... this is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home, our online home. There you will find, among other things, the chat room. Jump on in. The chatting is fine. Let's see who's in. Come on in. Wander on by. I think you'll enjoy it. You can also find there the Listen Live button, as well as, of course, the PayPal button that keeps everything going here at The Horn. That's, you know, this is a listener-supported operation, and that's just the fact of it. Tonight's program is brought to you by Waggy. Hi, Waggy. Thank you very much, Waggy, Waggy signed up for a subscription. And it came in just in time today. If you'd like to do that, it's all right there on the contribute page. You can sign up for a subscription to, make it, I suppose, easy, depending on what you want to do. Or if you just want to go contribution by contribution, that's fine, too. Here we go. It is the 11th day of October 2013. And I don't know exactly what it is they hope to accomplish, but whatever it was, the teabagger dumbvoy was rather of a flop today, and it'll probably be a flop tomorrow and a flop the day after. Even teabaggers have dignity, I suppose. And when you find out that when the first person gets run off after saying that they're going to convene a citizens grand jury and indict and arrest the Democrats in Congress who they deem not to be fulfilling their oaths, and that guy gets the sack, and then your leader is, what is that woman's name? I can't remember, but she was apparently not too, well, maybe she was. I mean, maybe the turnout's kind of proof. I saw a video earlier today from the teabag and dumb boy, and it was video of two trucks driving side by side, two semis. That's it. In traffic on the DC Beltway that is never very fluid in the first place. But maybe a lot of people stayed away in droves because they didn't have much stomach for it. The leader, did I mention this? The present leader of the teabagger dumbvoy thinks that This is not your usual birther, deather, tenther, bagger, booger eaterism. This is a real special brand of stupid. The woman who was leading this, who took over leadership after Mr. Conlon was booted out, and he got the sack. Actually, no, really, says that not that Barack Hussein Obama, president not sure as we know him, not that he is a Muslim, but that he is a zombie Muslim. Because this woman said that Barack Obama and Osama bin Laden are the same person. You know, same fingerprints, same DNA. The same person. Help. And maybe, like I said, maybe even teabaggers have some degree of dignity and stayed away simply because they didn't want to be associated with something that even they knew was lunacy. And your average teabagger will fall for anything. The first enterprising soul who sets up a three-card Monty table at a teabagger convention is going to walk away filthy rich. Because they're, well, otne ute aitbre, if you one what I een may. They'll never figure that out. Yeah, C.W. McCall wouldn't even stand in the rain for this one. We ain't got a convoy and ain't right. And I won't sing anymore. Kevin dropping a note. Trucker rally. Two trucks. Oh, darn. I had this image of one lonely truck stopped on the beltway in protest and then getting himself and his truck hauled off in handcuffs for being an idiot. Kind of destroyed the fantasy, those two trucks. Sigh. Signed, Kevin. Well, come on, Kevin. Into each life some rain must fall, for heaven's sakes. There, I don't know, was Zartha McGillicuddy or whatever that woman's name, was she driving one of the trucks? I don't know. And her best buddy was in the other one? Hey, yay, yay. Yeah, not much action at all. None. In the rain. No DC. But even though there wasn't much action on the highways of DC, there was, and by the way, we have here some, what is called in the news biz, some gnat sound. Ain't it? What a bunch of maroons.
Oh, Margaret.
It was so bad that these baggers, who apparently are not known for their truthiness, took to the Twitters. They even had their own hashtag #T2SDA. Spokesperson for the Virginia State Police said, all told, that the Patriots scrounged up 30 commercial vehicles and 15 pickup trucks, and one clown on a tricycle. No, they're not allowed on the Beltway. And they had their T2SDA little placards, and they had them some American flags, because they were going to stop the corruption of the Constitution. Except for the fact that they have no idea whatsoever of what's in it. But no, it was so pitiable, so utterly pathetic, that these genii had to lie about it. As noted, they took to the Twitters to post a photograph, but the photograph was actually taken last May when the Make-A-Wish Foundation put together a truck convoy in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. S.P. Gordon on Twitter said, more truckers to D.C. They have no idea what's about to hit them. They're picking up vets on the highway on the way. And in proof of what was about to hit D.C., they circulated a picture of a charity truck rally from Lancaster, Pennsylvania, this past May. They're sad, aren't they? If, of course, they were not rather dangerous. The Beltway is no place to the Beltway is no place to be callous or at all negligent under the best of circumstances. If you listen to the traffic reports on any DC radio station during rush hour, which I think begins about noon and ends about midnight, you'll find that wrecks are commonplace. To say the least. But in this instance, no, these baggers and baguettes calling themselves the 3%ers, I guess they're counting brain cells or trucks maybe, are going to defend our nation to the absolute death, as opposed to the non-absolute death, or the wishy-washy death, or the negotiable death, to the absolute death. The term 3%ers, by the way, comes from the fact that there's a meme circulating in the right-wingosphere that says, 3% of armed gun owners in America can overthrow the government. And you know those public airwaves that we've talked about from time to time? Well, apparently, there's a radio talker named Pete Santilli, who has taken the Dumbvoy under his wing. And, of course, they want Barack Obama removed from office by force if necessary. And they also want Senator John McCain and Aunt Pity Pat Lindsey Graham removed from office. And it was Santilli who said, we will defend our nation to the absolute death. Now, you can put that stuff out over the public airwaves, assuming that he's on the public airwaves. You can put that stuff out there, but you can't say booger. Or the brown word. Or several, you know, or the, yeah. early. Right. Jim via email noting that the Beltway is not for the faint of heart. Any of them on a tandem bike? No report of that. Also out in Arkansas, Fritz tweeting, those teabag truckers, Dumbvoy, make their movement look like John L. Smith was the greatest Razorback football coach ever. Hashtag epic effing fail. Well, tomorrow is College Football Saturday, so it's probably appropriate. No, Santilli is going to, yeah, the absolute death. You know that. The Sons of Liberty promised to show up with multiple civilian militia units. Not so much. Of course, the Sons of Liberty are patriot or so-called patriot organizations. You know, little right-wing terror cells in the heart of America. Just because it's so doggone interesting, let's check in with Pete Santilli, patriot on the Guerrilla Media Network. Whatever the hell that is. Come on, Pete, don't hide. Well, or not. Are we?
I want you to listen to me. I'm going to speak to everybody very forcefully at this point in the following manner. I explain this over and over and over again.
Wait a minute. Is this a new thing in broadcasting? I mean, I only use the reverb for the voice of God and things. But am I supposed to add a little reverb to the program just to make it interesting so that when we say, we will defend our country to the absolute death, it sounds like I'm saying it from inside a Campbell soup can? I don't know. But apparently it works for Pete Santilli. Pete's so silly. Oh, no. I couldn't stand it. Let's go back to Pete Santilli. So silly. Don't run and hide, Pete. Just because I use the reverb and all. Well, I guess we're not going to have Pete so silly. Didn't want him anyway. So, no, the Sons of Liberty apparently melt in the rain like the Wicked Witch or salt. You know, sugar melts, too. And some just didn't quite make it to the event. More's the pity. But just because there wasn't that much action out on the Beltway does not mean that there was not action in Washington, that there was not circus action in Washington, D.C., because, oh Lord, there was. Kind of wish I'd been there. It would have been fun to get media credentials. I love the circus. Because you know the Values Voter Summit kicked off today, right? Yeah, big fun. The Values Voter Summit kicked off, and it kicked off, I mean, it, with some absolute teabagging fireworks. Provided by by none other than tail gunning teabagging Ted Cruz, who brought a whole gunny sack full of crazy and stupid with him. And I use crazy advisedly. This guy needs to be pursued on a reality program or something. Okay, we've got Senator Cruz in our sights, and it looks like he's about to step into the net trap, and my colleague will soon spring the... Oh, he's upside down in the net. Yeah. And you know what the values voter summit is. That's where the snake handlers and the right-wing evangelical fundamentalists and so forth get into a full-on clavern. Yeah, this guy's a real winner. Let's if we can get any cooperation here. Let's check in with Teabag and Tail Gunner Ted.
I'm here this morning with a word of encouragement and exhortation. I want to say two things. Number one, these are extraordinary times. These are not typical times. The challenges facing this country are unlike any we have ever seen.
That's right.
You look at our Constitution, you look at our Bill of Rights. This is an administration that seems bound and determined to violate every single one of our Bill of Rights. I don't know that they've yet violated the Third Amendment, but I expect them to start quartering soldiers in people's homes soon. But if you look at the Bill of Rights, if you look at the First Amendment, this is an administration that has told servicemen and women that they cannot share their faith or risk discipline.
No, this administration has not. What this administration may have done, although it's not entirely certain, is to suggest that trying to proselytize the Afghans with the loving grace of the Lord Jesus Christ might be counterproductive to the overall mission itself. I think we could say probably is counterproductive, and that it makes it more likely that atrocities will be committed against our men and women in uniform over there as it is. But Teabag and Tail Gunner Ted, well, the truth ain't in him. So.
Tyranny!
This is an administration that has...
You know, in most snake handling sessions, somebody will holler out, testify! Testify! But when you go to the Values Voter Summit, you holler out, tyranny!
I don't know that they've yet violated the Third Amendment, but I expect them to start quartering soldiers in people's homes soon.
You know what? We'll be happy to let them sleep in the rainy bedroom. I got a feeling even quartered troops. That's all right. We'll go get quartered in somebody else's house, Bob. Thanks for the hospitality. But no. If we're gonna sleep in the rain, we might as well be outside. Yeah, I know the feeling.
But if you look at the Bill of Rights, if you look at the First Amendment, this is an administration that has told servicemen and women that they cannot share their faith or risk discipline. This is an administration that has reprimanded an Air Force chapel in Alaska for writing in a blog post, "There are no atheists in foxholes." Now, mind you, he was quoting President Dwight D. Eisenhower, who I might note has some passing familiarity with the military.
Has? Teabag and Tail Gunner Ted, do you know something we don't know, or just... Have you got old Ike's remains on a slab down in the basement there, and you're just got the Tesla coil and you're reanimating old Ike? Has present tense?
This is an administration that is telling Christian companies like Hobby Lobby, is telling that the Little Sisters of the Poor, that they must provide abortifacients or pay millions of dollars in government fines.
Abortifacients? Abortifacients? What the f*** is abortifacients? I'm a long-time knower of words, and I'm unfamiliar with these abortifacients. And even though he is ostensibly a senator from the state of Texas, that ain't nothing like any Texas accent I'm ever a-hearing. Oh, I'm sorry. Abortifacients. we mean abortifacients, apparently. Which the pill ain't. Note rolling in from Robert in Australia. Supporting the troops? Hey, Bob, isn't putting up a soldier overnight supporting the troops? I guess they don't... you're absolutely right, Robert, and I guess they don't want to support the troops. The only way we'd be quartering troops in our homes is if we lacked the money to keep the bases running. Now, who's doing something in Washington, D.C. that might threaten the ability to keep our military bases open? Just asking. And I agree with Jim. Note from Jim. This is very scary in light of the idiots who believe this crap. The big lie, and it is frightening. But if we sit around here shivering in fear all night long, it's A, going to be really, really crappy radio, and B, if we don't laugh a little bit once in a while, especially when we're laughing at teabagger, birther, deather, tenther, booger eater, pick their teeth with their toenail clippings, right wingers, who the hell are we going to laugh at? Marty noticed something there in the clip. Every one of our bills of rights? Says Marty, I thought there was only one bill of rights, and the things that God forgot to include in the... And those are the first 10 amendments. The things that God forgot to include in the Constitution. Well, there's that. Marty also offering up the considerable point. I thought Hobby Lobby was trying to get out of providing bill control from its female employees. Yeah, there you go. Cheap fundamentalist evangelical bastards. Back to Teabag and Tailgunner Ted.
The Little Sisters of the Poor is an order of nuns that provides health care to the elderly poor. The federal government is coming after them saying they have to provide abortifacients as well.
Abortifacients.
We've got the Second Amendment, which no administration...
Now, wait, before we go into the Second Amendment, I got to back up to the abortifacients. And I'm just going to put a call out there, because she has worked in this field for... years and years, and probably knows this stuff better than any of the rest of us. Beth, are you out there? Beth in Dallas? Could you give me a paragraph on abortifacients as compared to, say, a pregnancy birth control pill? You don't have to just really knock yourself out or anything, but I don't want it. Jeez. You're the expert here. If you got a minute. Abortifacients. Oh, but we're on to the Second Amendment now.
Administration in this history of this country has ever come after guns like this administration.
Now, we're having our fun and everything, but can somebody explain to me how this administration has come after guns? Because I'd feel a lot better about President Not Sure if he would come after the guns. But instead, under President Not Sure, we got a law that says you can now carry guns into federal national parks that wasn't there before President Not Sure got here. A little bit of loss. Have there been any national gun laws? I mean, really? The gun show loophole? That tepid little bit of nothing? Closing the gun show loophole so that somebody can't just wander into a gun show and buy enough firepower to take down, I don't know, an elementary school? That's coming after guns? These last 5 years or so have been the best years ever for gun stores and ammunition manufacturers. The gun stores can't keep the bullets on the shelves because of all these pasty-faced, terrified, water-boweled white people who are scared to death that that one in their white house is going to come and get their guns. So if by coming after our guns, Tail Gunner Teabagger Ted means increasing sales of guns, I'm sorry, I can't make it work. Oh, do go on, Ted. Excellent.
Now, Vice President Joe Biden you know the nice thing? You don't need a punchline.
Ted, go ask Paul Ryan about punchlines. The best punchline of all, of course, was the ass-whipping that Joe Biden delivered to Paul Ryan, such that Paul Ryan, the pig-licking vice presidential nominee that he was, couldn't even carry his own congressional district or his own hometown in Wisconsin. No, Ted, you're right. You don't need a punchline. Because back last November, they made teabaggers like you the punchline.
You just say his name, people laugh. But Vice President Joe Biden had some advice. He said, if anyone's attacking your home, just go outside with a double-barreled shotgun and fire both barrels in the air. Which is very, very good advice. If it so happens you're being attacked by a flock of geese.
Or if perhaps you would rather not run the risk of the double-aught buck in your 12-gauge double-barreled shotgun going through the wall and killing your sleeping infant in her crib. Inadvertently shooting our children. That's a real laugher, Ted. A real laugher.
You dick!
Thank you, Jeff.
We've seen the Fourth and Fifth Amendment, an administration whose drone policy and wiretap policies and your emails and your phone calls, their view is the privacy of the American people does not matter to them.
And who first enunciated that view, Ted? Would you care to tell the knuckle walkers and the mouth breathers and the deathers and the tenthers and the birthers and the booger eaters who enunciated that policy? And now that it's being carried out with real vim and vigor by that one in our White House, would you care to tell? No, because they'll run screaming from the room, Ted, if you say the word George W. Bush. Because after all, he promised that he loved the little fetuses, and this here is a values voter summit, and he had a whole Congress, a House and a Senate, and he had the Supreme Court in his pocket, and he was president, and they never, somehow or another, they never managed to make the demonic abortifacients go away. Why was that, Ted?
And then there is the 10th Amendment, an amendment I'm pretty sure they've gone and cut out of every copy of the Constitution in the Library of Congress.
Really? We're defacing books in the Library of Congress? That's a tall order. Them Kenyan Muslim socialists, they're an inscrutable bunch.
We've seen an explosion of federal government power, none more important or significant or dangerous than Obamacare. We look at the...
None more significant or important or dangerous than Obamacare, where somebody who can't afford to participate in the playground of the wealthy, i.e. the for-profit insurance market, can now get health care with a federal subsidy. My goodness gracious. What? Oh. I shiver to think about it.
State of our economy. In the last 4 years, our economy has grown on average 0.9% a year. There's only one other period since World War II of four consecutive years of less than 1% average growth. That was 1979 to 1982. It's coming out of the Jimmy Carter administration. It was the same failed economic policies, out of control spending and taxes and regulation, and it produced the exact same results. And we've seen...
Oh, you hear them? They've hushed up. They're not having any more fun anymore. Well, they understand that now Ted Cruz, with his big old brain, big old Canadian brain, Ted Cruz is laying it on serious-like. That one in our White House is just like Jimmy Carter, who happened to preside over America the last time America was made up of a majority of homes in which there were both parents and only one of them working to support the family because one person could make enough money to support a family. Then came Ronnie Reagan. And the brown stuff hit the fan. Yeah. Ted, I guess you can't be bothered to note that poverty was also declining under that self-same Jimmy Carter, but that it took off like a horse out of a burning barn once greasy-headed old B-movie actor took over. No, they'd tar and feather you for saying that, Ted.
In a hapless, feckless foreign policy, leading from behind.
Feckless? Our foreign policy is feckless? That's probably because the government because of the government shutdown and we're out of feck. My goodness gracious.
Said by a president who doesn't appreciate the concept of an oxymoron.
Her little O-slay on the uptake, on the oxymoron word. But I guess it was safe to use it since Flush Flimball wasn't there.
These are extraordinary times. Listen, every one of you is here because you love this country. Because you love freedom. And you know that we can't keep going down this road.
I got to go back to something Dr. John has said on occasion. What do we mean by freedom? You see, he just says freedom, and they, yeah, hallelujah, freedom. He just blows by the word. It's at this point, the word freedom is nothing more than right-wing code for when the hell is that one going to leave our White House?
Concept of an oxymoron.
I love how long it took him to get it. I just do.
These are extraordinary times. Listen, every one of you is here because you love this country. Because you love freedom. And you know that we can't keep going down this road much longer.
You mean the road you put us on, Ted? The road to default? The road to government shutdown? The defund Obamacare road that wouldn't have been defunded even if you'd been successful road, Ted? Don't worry, it's almost over, Marty.
We're nearing the edge of a cliff. And our window to turn things around, my friends, I don't think it is long. I don't think it's 10 years. We have a couple of years to turn this country around, or we go off the cliff to oblivion.
Oblivia? Does that share a common border with Brazil? We're not 2 years away from the cliff, Ted. We're not 2 weeks away from the cliff, Ted. We are 4 days away from the cliff, Ted. And you've dropped a brick on the accelerator and thrown it into gear, Ted.
Throughout the history of the world, we have seen great nations rise and fall. And everyone here today is here today because we are not content to allow the United States of America to do anything but continue to rise and remain the greatest country on the face of this earth.
Going to be kind of hard to do, Ted, with senior citizens not getting their Social Security checks and disabled people not getting their Social Security checks and little children not getting food for their rumbling bellies and little children not being able to get a head start on education. And then again, greatest country in the world is another one of those code words. We'll be the greatest country in the world if that black man will just leave our White House, won't we, Ted?
Senator Cruz, why won't you support a pathway to citizenship for immigrant families?
Thank you, sir, for being here. I appreciate. Look. It is a great thing that people can express their First Amendment rights. And I only wish the Obama administration respected First Amendment rights that much.
You'll notice he didn't answer the question. Why won't you support a pathway to citizenship? Well, because he got it. He got to the top of the ladder, and he's going to stomp every hand on every rung underneath him that he can reach with his little leather-shod feet, hooves, cloven. Marty observing, I guess old Cruz forgot the violation of Second Amendment rights of those who survived Katrina at the same time as having, you know, dark skin. Our buddy, the Angry Indian, observing, Ted Cruz doing his best McCarthy isn't nearly as stupid sounding as his argument that he is more American than the black chap. Yeah. That's about as much Ted Cruz as I've got to play or have the stomach to play. That having been said, however, There were other little gems, and you deserve to know them. All full of himself, as you can tell that he was. Teabag and Tail Gunner Ted offered up this nugget. So this afternoon, President Obama has invited the Senate Republicans to the White House. So after leaving here, I'm going to be going to the White House. I will make a request. If I'm never seen again, please send a search and rescue team. I very much hope by tomorrow morning I don't wake up amidst the Syrian rebels. He actually said that. This man is a walking advertisement for Thorazine. Or Haldol. Or God knows what. That's right. Ted Cruz actually said in public that black man in our White House was plotting to kidnap him and send him to Syria. It might be beneficial to remind Teabag and Tailgunner Ted. Man, when you think about it, Teabag and Tailgunner, it's got some freight, doesn't it? Teabag and Tailgunner Ted, that the last time we were kidnapping anybody and sending them to Syria, it was George W. Bush. Just saying. He dealt with some hecklers and asked, "Is anybody left at OFA headquarters? I'm actually glad that the president's whole political staff is here instead of actually doing mischief in the country. It would seem that President Obama's paid political operatives are out in force. The men and women in this room scare the living daylights out of them." Well, as Jim noted, they scare the living daylights out of me, too. Because they are low information, low intellect, low intelligence, and highly motivated. I hate. And then, at some point in time, he started talking about the Cold War, and he said, "Our foreign policy is détente, which I'm pretty sure is French for surrender." Really? Once again, Shakespeare. Cassius has a lean and hungry look. So not much cooking on the highways of D.C., but plenty cooking inside the Values Voters Summit. Run, by the way, by Tony Norman Perkins, who himself is feeling kind of congressional these days. But that wasn't all. Guess who wasn't at the voters' values? You know what? You know who the big winner is out of the Values Voter Summit? The big winner out of the Values Voter Summit is Chris Christie, who was rather conspicuously not invited to either attend or speak. And couldn't have bought that PR with his entire campaign war chest. Anybody know if, what's his name? Scott Walker got invited? I don't know. But Chris Christie definitely scored a win by being uninvited. Vociferously uninvited. But they did. They had some real Lulus at the Voters Value Summit. Values Voters Summit. Who gives a damn? He's got a new book to hustle. And I guess his star is on the rise. So they brought in Mark Levin, a man with a voice made for print. Mark Levin has this new book about how he wants a whole bunch of constitutional amendments, and I don't think I'm cheating when I say this. You might want to tune in to Dr. Bill if you never have before. You might want, and if you have before, then you already know that it's where you ought to be between 4 and 6 p.m. on any given Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday. You might want to tune in to Dr. Bill on Monday, because I have a feeling he's going to deconstruct, because I had lunch with Dr. Bill this afternoon, and he was showing me something that he had on his Kindle. He has the texts of Mark Levin's proposed constitutional amendments. Really. And I just looked at the titles of the damn things, and the titles alone are scary as hell. They are a recipe for the absolute, complete, total, and utter destruction of popular government in the United States. Monday, Dr. Bill, you want to be there, 4 p.m. Here then, Mark Levin.
Mark, you have been a frequent guest here at the Values Voter Summit over the last 8 years that we've had this. Would you have envisioned 5 years ago, 6 years ago, maybe even 4 years ago, that we would be at the point that we're in our nation as it pertains to the ignoring of the constitutional boundaries of what this administration is doing?
Yes.
Yes. Mark, you are a Jew, are you not?
Yes.
Mark, do you realize that all of these people in this audience are just waiting for Jesus to come back? So he can tell them that if you don't confess his holy righteousness, that they get to chop you into sashimi?
Yes.
Because it's true. On that great day of glory, when Jesus comes from parting in the clouds, old Mark Levin will have to profess the majesty of Christ, or there'll be so many right wing values voters gigging him. Julius Caesar will look like he had a flesh wound.
And it's going to get worse. And it's going to get worse because it feeds on itself. We are unmoored from the rule of law, and so the President of the United States can say brazenly, and people barely blink, that if Congress doesn't act, he will. These are the statements of soft tyranny. That's what that is. When Congress says they're going to pass omnibus bills, and they pass them in the dark of night, Obamacare, and we, the people, don't even get an opportunity to read.
Wait a minute. Wait, stop, huh? Now, I remember when Medicare Part D was passed literally in the dark of night, and the Republican Congress suspended its own rules in order to do so. I remember that. But the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act was passed in the dark of night? They just snuck it in under military appropriations? No, they didn't. You were there. You were listening. You were paying attention. Do you remember the debates? Because I remember some of them got rather heated among those of us who wanted a public option included in the bill. There are still those of us who are rather bothered by the fact that the Affordable Care Act, such as it is, with all of its subsidies and everything, winds up being a massive corporate welfare giveaway for the for-profit insurance industry. Wowzer. In the dark and still of the night. I don't know. Now remember, this is a book hustle, okay? But have you ever heard a human being who less needed to be anywhere near a microphone? Not only is this guy a complete and total jackassed society idiot, his voice makes fingernails on a chalkboard sound mellifluous.
In advance, that is called tyranny. When the bureaucracy spits out rules that shut down our coal mines and shut down pipelines and shut down...
Oh, you fucker. Rules that shut down our coal mines. The only underground coal mine that I'm aware of having been shut down by any sort of federal bureaucratic rule is the Upper Big Branch mine that was shut down after Mark Levin's buddy, Don Blankenship, managed to incinerate 29 human beings. And I will remind you that those rescue teams went into that mine repeatedly looking for survivors, and after a while simply looking for bodies. And they walked by those 29 incinerated miners time after time, and they did not even know they were walking past them, not because it was dark, not because of debris, but because the heat and the force of the explosion had been so profound. That those victims of the free market and its unseen hand could no longer be appreciably recognized as ever having been human.
Shut down our coal mine.
I'd like to punch him in the face. I don't think you have ever heard me say that on a radio program before. I don't think you've ever heard me say that anywhere before. I'd like to move this little fascist prick, except for I've got too much respect for the people who would be his, otherwise be his neighbors. I'd like to move them up a holler underneath a mountaintop removal site. I'd like to let this excrescent little shit weasel breathe ultra fine dust particles for a couple of years. Until the doctor looked at him and said, well, you know, Mark, the cancer is all over your body, and the most we can hope to do is make you comfortable until you finally, mercifully die. Mark. Because the only thing that happened with regard to shutting down our coal mines... What do you mean, our, Bubba? Are you deeply invested in Arch or Patriot? Or Alpha? Are they in your portfolio, Mark? All blood-soaked as they are, and wiped over with blurred your stock certificates with salty human tears, Mark. Our coal mines. Our. Not my coal mines. Not your coal mines.
down our fisheries, even though Congress hasn't...
Oh, they've shut down our fisheries, too. But back to the coal mines. He's talking about the Spruce Mine veto. The Spruce Mine veto, which was going to be 9,000 acres of moonscape, an absolute devastation, in which there was no scientific disagreement that it would absolutely devastate the surrounding ecosystem for something on the order of probably 100,000 years. And the EPA said to the coal company, listen, if you'll just modify your mining engineering plan, we'll be happy to permit this all the way through. And the coal company said, screw you, EPA, there's more political hay to be made out of us digging our heels in than there is in the money that we'll make out of this mountaintop removal complex, even if we factor in all the people we're going to poison and kill in the process. That's the dirty little secret behind the Spruce Mine. It could have easily gone forward. But the coal company, much like the Republican House at present, said no. Because not long before that, there'd been another massive mountaintop removal mine complex called Hobet, H-O-B-E-T, that had similar problems. And there, the coal company said, oh, what, you want us to tweak the... Oh, okay, we only get to destroy 6 streams instead of 9? Pshaw. Sounds good to us. And away they ran.
Agreed to act? That's called tyranny. When the Supreme Court of the United States overturns votes in California or rewrites our statutes in this country, that's called tyranny. So what are we going to do about it?
So what are we going to do about it?
It's hard to do something about something that didn't happen. Really? This guy's got some brass. Ain't got no voice. He's got some brass. The Supreme Court... The Supreme Court rewrites our laws. What he's saying is that he's pissed off that... And who did that? Oh, John Roberts authored the Affordable Care Act opinion. And I guess he's mad because the homos might be getting married sometime in California. What's it to him? He lives in Virginia. Jesus.
That's the question, and that's why I wrote it.
And let's talk about that answer. How do you actually propose something in this book that heretofore you were not supportive of?
That's correct. I propose that we look at the Constitution to find the answer to what's going on in this country. We don't have to invent it. We don't need abstractions. We don't have to make it up. And it's in the Constitution. And George Mason said, and he was right, that when Congress turns oppressive, and what he meant was this new federal government, that the people have to have recourse short of violence. And he said that recourse is, this is 2 days before the end of the Constitutional Convention, he said that recourse is in the people and the state legislatures, and that they need to be able to go to the state legislatures and the state legislatures collectively, two-thirds, can have a meeting called a convention, not a constitutional convention, a convention to propose amendments to all the other states, just as if Congress meets to propose amendments to the states. And that is how We return to a constitutional republic, which, folks, we simply do not have today.
So the...
We don't have a constitutional republic today. It's all gone because there's a Negro in the White House. Wowzer. It's pretty bold. I would rather take a whipping than listen to Mark Levin speak. But I think there is a certain amount of value that attaches to hearing Mark Levin speak. Because, as I have said, this is a revolution that is taking place right now in the Congress. And what this man is proposing is that the revolution be expanded, and that what is left of our experiment in self-government be put to an end. Listen.
The key here is, one of the keys, is returning a focus to the states, which in many ways have just become the lackeys for the federal government in terms that this administration expects the states to carry out its orders, where it really should be reversed.
You realize
wait a minute.
The
wait, stop.
Less...
All stop. This administration expects the states to carry out its orders, when really it should be in the reverse. We had a little disagreement about that between 1861 and 1865, and our side won. Their side lost. Their side said that any given state should be able to declare an act of the Congress to be null and void in that given state. It was called, you know this, nullification. But a state should be able to nullify an act of the Congress and refuse the laws that are constitutionally made. What this man is preaching is treason. This man is preaching secession. He is preaching nullification. One of the constitutional amendments that I saw the title of today while visiting with Dr. Bill was an actual nullification amendment that would allow the states to nullify acts of Congress. Just so you'll know. These teabaggers, and of course they're just a subset of the values voters, so let's understand the values voters for who they are. Because I've got a couple of emails on point here. Ron and Raleigh asking, Bob, these values voters are by their definition Christians, right? Right. Unless it was, you know, some Kenyan Muslim socialist lackey that was there observing that Ted Cruz was so worried about. There's probably no atheists or Muslims or... Yeah. Ron asks, these values voters are by their definition Christians, right? Where are the lions when you need them? Ron also asking, Judas Priest, Bob, just how stupid is a wide swath of white America? And I'm not sure which asshole he's talking about, but he's maybe Cruz, 26 minutes ago. Yeah, probably Cruz. This asshole is standing before a crowd of white people and lying his ass off This shows once again that the Republicans will never own the evil they do. They, in their opinion, have done nothing to cause any of the shitstorm that is just revving up. Danny says, regarding that thing called Mark Levin, I'd like to kick him in the balls, but I fear he doesn't have any. Now, Danny, just because he talks like that. Robert in Australia, under the subject line Freedom of Speech, says, W came to Australia to thank us for helping invade and occupy Iraq. We have a joint sitting of Parliament. Both houses sit together in the House of Representatives. Only one person stood up to confront W over what he felt were serious issues, and that person was Senator Bob Brown. He was removed from the joint sitting for violating the rules of a joint sitting. As he was being dragged out of Parliament, W said, hey, I believe in freedom of speech. And the drones clapped, not realizing what was happening. Condoleezza Rice came to Australia to speak at a university. Some students stood up and started asking her questions during her speech. They were dragged from the room by security guards. While they were being dragged out, Condoleezza Rice said, I believe in freedom of speech. And the drones clapped, not realizing what was happening. Yay, freedom! Wolverines! You know, this whole Wolverines meme is catching on, I do believe. And that's what I meant about having an inquiry into the meaning of freedom. Note coming in from our buddy Harry over in Baltimore. Below excerpted is the American from the American Spectator website published on September 25th, admittedly a month or so, a while back. An obviously conservative and obviously Jewish commentator, Aaron Goldstein, said in part the following about Senator Ted Cruz and his comparison of Obama to Hitler during his Cruz's Senate filibuster. Goldstein writes, as much as I dislike President Obama's policies and his personal disposition, he isn't Hitler, nor is Mitch McConnell a modern-day Neville Chamberlain. The Obama administration isn't going to invade Texas and commit genocide against its residents. Suffice to say, Cruz's invocation of the Nazis in the context of the defunding Obamacare trivializes the cold, calculated evil that resulted in the deaths of millions of people, including 6 million Jews. Cruz is also guilty of engaging in historical revisionism. Cruz engages in more historical revisionism when he suggests Americans believed Hitler would conquer Europe and thus opposed entering World War II. If that weren't enough, Cruz pulls a Joe Biden and argues that those Americans opposing entry into World War II would have been on TV saying, you cannot defeat the Germans, okay? By the time Hitler had invaded Poland, some Americans had a chance to see televisions at the 1939 World's Fair in New York. But most Americans would have seen Lindbergh's speech if they watched the movie-toned newsreels at the local theater, or more likely heard it on the radio. Televisions weren't widely available in this country until the early 1950s. One would think that would be common knowledge, but perhaps not. So even so-called conservatives understand that Cruz is a liar. Of monumental proportions, I might add. Cruz sits in a position of power. Mark Levin screeches behind a microphone. But don't think for an instant that the crap that he has ginned up in this latest little piece of treason that he's published won't be taken up by the values voters and by the Ted Cruzes and by the Louis Gohmerts and by the 1L Michelles and the Steve Kings. Listen up.
Influence in our government than like LULAC or the AFL-CIO or whatever they are. And the fact is that under our constitutional system, it's the federal government that has limited defined powers and the states have plenary authority. But obviously that doesn't happen today, does it? Now, some of you come from blue states. I apologize that you're in these blue states. I refuse to live in a dark blue state, but some of you live in dark blue states, and you're saying, well, this is great for those of you who are in purple states and red states, and my answer to you is this. America is a blue state right now, and the only way to address this is to find 34 state legislatures and to take the time to do it. It took us a century to get here, and so it may take us 20 or 30 years to get out of this. But we have no options. This is the only option.
And I know you do. Do you fully comprehend how dangerous this is when we hear there are no options? What happens when there are no options? What happens when the jury box and the ballot box have become ineffective? Just ask one of your gun-toting neighbors. They'll be happy to tell you, especially if they got a Gadsden flag hanging off their front porch.
It's us in the state legislatures, and the state legislatures collectively have enormous power. Enormous power. Not the governors, they're not involved. Not the state courts, they're not involved. I don't care if no senator or no member of Congress supports this. We bypass them. That's the entire purpose of this process. When you...
Now, understand something. This is not new. Actually, what this is pulled from is from the right wing's anti-woman strategy. They spent a lot of time going after a woman's right to control the internal workings of her reproductive system on the federal level. And it kept not working. God, the tens of millions they spent is probably past calculation. But then they changed tactics. And they started moving inside the state legislatures. And that's how you wind up with what happened this past summer in Austin, Texas. And that's how you wind up with the crazy shit that comes flushing out of the state house in Kansas. That's how you wind up with personhood amendments in Colorado and Mississippi Stan. I just think it needs to be taken into account. This is part of a larger unified strategy. It is also, I might add, the strategy followed by the Koch brothers. Yes, they were wildly successful with the teabaggers in 2010 and 2012 in overtaking the House, but they have spent a far greater effort taking over state houses in the several states. See, it's the state houses that do the reapportionment that establishes what the electoral districts will be and the congressional districts. This is part of a much bigger picture. And it is cultural, and it is social, and it is political. They have finally come up with what they think, these right-wingers do, is a sort of unified field theory for them to finally reach the ascendant in their goals. And their goals are nothing short of the absolute destruction of popular government in the United States. We're talking about the destruction of everything from everything that Madison ever mused on or warned about. They're tired of half measures, and they want nothing to do with bipartisanship or anything else that smacks of compromise or collaboration. For this country, as far as these treasonous right wingers is concerned, it's their way or the highway. and they're rolling. Granted, they only got a couple of trucks out in D.C. today, but they're rolling. We had our laughs, but they're rolling. They're not kidding.
Watch the Senate floor, and you see a handful of conservatives defending this nation against Obamacare, and they are under brutal assault in their own party. Something is wrong. When Ted Cruz...
Hey, Mark. Do you have the stones to criticize the Koch brothers? Because the Koch brothers are running as fast and as far away as they can get from the very knuckle-dragging, mouth-breathing, drool-dribbling teabaggers that you're talking about. The Koch brothers put out a damn statement the other day saying, hey, we had nothing to do with this defund Obamacare business. It wasn't us. No, he will not. Because Charles or David Koch could pick up a phone tomorrow and Mark Levin, and it might be one of the few acts I would ever agree with the Koch brothers on, would never be allowed near within the same county as a microphone.
And Mike Lee and Rand Paul are the exception. Something is wrong in that party. And I do not believe...
Then leave the party, Mark. This is easy enough. Look over here, on the so-called left. Hello? We've got all kinds of good progressive people who didn't get their way inside the Democratic Party and went out and now they're Greens. And I'm about halfway there myself. Go form me a third party, Mark. Let's see, he won't. Because it is not principle that the Mark Levins and the Ted Cruz's are interested in. It is the naked exercise of power.
That Washington intends to reform itself. Just see it, what's going on right now. What are they fighting over? Really, they're fighting over nothing. We have a $17 trillion fiscal operating debt that's growing by $1 trillion every year. We have over $90 trillion in unfunded liabilities.
And the deficit has come down faster under this president than under any other president ever. And it has come down thanks to children without food, cops not on the streets, roads being ground up into gravel, and hundreds of thousands of federal workers out of work and out of jobs, who were performing vital services before the Mark Levins and Ted Cruz's and Rand Paul's and Mike Lee's of the world began screaming about drowning the government in a bathtub. It is anarchy that these people want. Somalia with cable. I don't have any ratings to worry about here. I don't have any advertisers to worry about pissing off or pleasing. So you can at least understand that whatever I say is my heartfelt conviction. And I am absolutely convinced, as sure as I am, that the planet is rolling eastward in space now toward either night or day. But anarchy, an anarchy of the unbounded free market and capitalism on steroids, gone absolutely wild, and every person for him or herself philosophy is their absolute goal. And I would not dare to speak for you, but that fills me with a sense of ungodly dread. Because I'm afraid they're going to get their way. Also at lunch earlier today was Boss Man Wayne. And he said to say thank you for those of you who have taken the Echo out of the mailbox. And Boss Man Wayne and I don't disagree very often. And by disagree, I don't mean...
God damn it!
No. I said I have no confidence that the shutdown will end and that the default will be avoided. Boss Man Wayne thinks we will avoid default. I hope he's right. But I think we all agree that if default is avoided, it will be because President Not Sure gives some more of you and me away. Because the military's off the table. And once the military's off the table, you and me, we, Mom and Dad, Grandma and Grandpa, our precious children and grandchildren, great-grandchildren, they're on the menu. And we'll have us some entitlement reform.
Not a darn thing they're doing up there is going to change that trajectory. So what are we going to do? Surrender to this? Well, we have to stand up for ourselves. And the way we stand up for ourselves is in the state legislatures. One at a time, patiently but aggressively, we take back our country.
We take back our country. Because, see, it's not our country, too. It's their country. They're taking it back from us, even though we don't have it. There's no universal single-payer health care outside of the VA and Medicaid. There's no electoral reform. The Social Security retirement age has not been lowered to 55. We haven't drastically reduced the size of our military. And that's just a few things. We don't have absolute pay equity for women in this country. We haven't done a goddamn thing about the prison industrial complex. We are making no efforts whatsoever to try to defeat crime by defeating poverty and ignorance. Every child in this country is not guaranteed a college education. Teachers are not paid on the same level as physicians. We haven't stopped mountaintop removal. We haven't stopped the Keystone XL pipeline. We haven't stopped fracking. We haven't stopped the offshore drilling that gave us the BP Horizon disaster. We haven't stopped climate change. We've hardly done a damn thing about climate change. But Mark Levin presumes that we have his country, and he and they at the Values Voters Summit, by God, intend to take it back. And if you consider all the right-wing horrors that are being visited upon this country, hour by hour, day by day, week by week, month by month, year by year, if you consider that for even a moment, then it will give you the absolute vapors to consider that Mark Levin and the values voters don't think we're sick enough yet. They don't think this country has been disassembled enough yet. They want more brutality, more wars, more pollution, more carbon dioxide in the atmosphere, less safety and security for workers, less pay for workers, less workers. I shiver to think about the nation that my grandchildren will inherit. I weep to think about my children's old age. Not because of something liberals or progressives are doing, or anything, well, but because of the America that Confederate sympathizers and fellow travelers like Mark Levin want to create in their own image.
With the focus being on the states and the map, the pathway forward that you've laid out in the Liberty Amendments, which, by the way, is available here at the bookstore, you've got to be encouraged by what you've seen happen in the states in the last few years. I mean, there are good trends at the state. When you look at what's happening here in Washington as the backdrop, that is discouraging. But what's happening in the states is quite encouraging.
It's encouraging. And what's happening is a lot of the states are trying to resist in different ways that they can. But because what's happened in Washington, D.C., we don't really have checks and balances. What you think going on right now, I can already tell you what's going to happen. The debt's going to go up. There's still going to be a massive yearly deficit. They'll throw us something like repeal of the medical tax or something like that, but it's going to keep moving in that direction because that's all they know, because the left knows that they run the country.
Stop it. The left knows that they run the country. It's going to come as a real shock. Ask Rick Smith. Ask Mike Malloy. Ask me. Ask anybody in the Horn family commune. Does the left run the country? And as soon as we're done laughing, the answer will come almost as if in some sort of call and response. Oh, hell no! The left doesn't run the country. But see, Mark Levin can just say this because, again, he's talking to a bunch of evangelical fundamentalist Christians. And they are accustomed to believing anything that gets said by a person standing up in front of them, especially if they have been told in advance that whatever is going to be said to them is the inspired word of their invisible friend. These people want the theocracy that obtained in the Massachusetts Bay Colony, that even the Massachusetts Bay Colony had to abandon because it was proving to be absolutely unsustainable and a sure as hell roadmap to destruction. Got a tweet here from Sandra. Obama's going to stop the default by offering up shit that's not his to offer. I think I know what Sandra means by that, but I won't presume to put words in her mouth. Giving away the so-called entitlements. These rotten bastards are going to make me a straight up Marxist if I'm not already. I used to think, well, you know, that whole private property thing. I want to own some stuff. I don't want to, you know, I don't want to be beholden to the state for this microphone or this mixing board or these computers. But you know what? If these bastards get their way, I will be. Because dictatorships are dictatorships. Our dictatorships are dictatorships. A rose is a rose is a rose. And whether you call it Marxism or fascism or anything that involves authority, you know, it all boils down to, I mean, the distance between Soviet communism or Chinese communism and Marxism is a gulf so broad as to be scarcely able to be bridged. It can't be bridged. There's no resemblance. We're talking about authoritarianism. Marty just noted in an email, hell, Bob, these values voters are making going expat the only option. And I trust that Marty's a little bit younger than I. So maybe that option's open to him. To anyone above 45, it isn't. Not possible. We might as well be locked in, because there's nowhere to go and no way to get away. There's nothing left but to be a part of the resistance. Early this morning, I saw all the talk about the poll numbers that came out that said that America really, really hates the Republicans right now. Really a lot. And I chuckle when I see those things. Because it doesn't matter a damn. We won, Democrats did, the popular vote overall for Congress in the last election. You'll notice we still have a Republican House. Because those votes are counted or not. In individual districts. And all that these stupid polls are going to indicate to me is the ongoing lack of perspicacity on the part of the pollsters about the nature of the makeup of Congress until such time as I see a poll that shows that running an old yaller dog against Louis Gohmert in Texas's first district will result in Louis Gohmert being no longer a member of Congress. When you show me a poll that says that Steve King of Iowa is on his way out no matter what because he's got 80% opposition in his own district, then I'll think there's change on the way. Until then, no. The most you can hope for is that some of these teabaggers who have pissed off the Koch brothers more than they care to be pissed off will be replaced by another Koch brother designee who will then do a better job of following the Koch brothers' lead than this latest crop of Koch brothers designees. Hint, they will not be Democrats, and they will damn sure not be anything even remotely resembling centrist. They're still going to be out there hand-wringing about the debt and the deficit and the poors, so poor, so black, eating food. And they'll still be clamoring for more Appalachian mountains to be blown to perdition, and for more and more toxic pipelines to be built, and for more fracking, more carbon dioxide, more heat, more climate change, more disaster. And, well, you know, popcorn.
And the Republicans basically support the status quo with some adjustment. That's about it. So we're stuck. If you think this top-down, authoritarian, centralized method that somehow we can fix this, I'm not saying don't stop fighting in these primaries and everything. Of course, fight everywhere and at every time. But fundamentally, at least for the last 100 years and certainly the last 80 years, what's happened is they've changed the system. So the social compact's been broken. So the Constitution is not honored. And so if they're not honoring the Constitution, what do we, who believe in constitutional republicanism, what do we do about it? And I'm just saying that the framers told us what to do about it if we seek to do it. Now, I accept that humans are imperfect. I accept that every institution in this country is imperfect.
Yeah, but do you accept Jesus Christ as your personal Lord and Savior? Because we got a baptismal, we got a baptizing barrel right back here, and we can get you into the flock of the elected lickety-split, Mark Levin, if you'll just accept Jesus Christ into your heart.
I accept that states are imperfect, but that's the genius of the federalism system. Power is dispersed. If you have one out-of-control state or 10 out-of-control states, there's still 40 more states. But if you have one out-of-control Supreme Court, one out-of-control Congress, and one out-of-control president, there's nowhere to go. And that's the problem. Unless we go back to the Constitution to save the Constitution. That's...
Yeah, yeah, you know, and here endeth the Levin lesson. The only way we can save the Constitution is by killing the Constitution. Does that scare you? You think... Can you imagine a Second Amendment, a Mark Levin Second Amendment, with stand your ground written into the Constitution? Can you imagine a Mark Levin First Amendment where there is no freedom from religion, but only freedom to choose a religion? And this guy's a collaborator. It'll be freedom to choose a Christian religion. All others need not apply. And yeah, like I said before, a nullification amendment that says that the states can overturn anything that they don't like about what the Congress does. And at which point in time, that federalism system that little gnome was talking about is gone. Dead, baby. Over. There is no federalism. There is no federal government. Which has been the hard right wing, the birther, the deather, the tenther, the bircher goal all along. And if you'll do the basic research, you'll find that to be true. Damn. It's a bitch when the phones are out. Hour and 45 minute filibobster. Some Friday on the front porch, huh? Sorry. Oh, there's other stuff. I can't stand... This feels, and I use that word advisedly, Oh, I'm sorry, Anthropogene. She says, don't say anarchy. My anarchist friends do not like being compared to teabaggers. Well, I dare say that your anarchist friends are probably less anarchist than these people are. Most of the anarchists I know, and I do, are more along the lines of people who want hyper-democratic institutions. Or not institutions, but processes that are de facto leaderless. That's what anarchy means. Anarchon comes from the Greek. It means without archons. Archons were the leaders of ancient Greek cities, in particular the archons of Athens. So to be anarchy is to be without leaders. In other words, a sort of democracy of the whole. And thus, less anarchists than these people are anarchists. Shall we make a new word? What we're talking about here, in essence, with these baggers and these values voters and these followers of Jesus, free market Jesus, mind you. They are chaotic capitalists or capitalist chaoticists. In chaos is great money to be made. Even when things are falling apart. I mean, there were people who got rich on the stock market crash of 1929. Oh, and I'd like to offer a correction. It turns out that Marty is 3 years older than I. And he says, I'm looking to going expat for some kind of retirement. Drop me a postcard. Jim writing in, what is wrong with your phone? It doesn't work. Oh, and God, here's Move On sending me an email saying, no pay for Congress! Please. Marty noting, I feel like a Delta House member after Dean Wormer has left. Double secret probation? And every spring, the toilets explode. Jim noting, War of the Radical Republicans. Like the Martians in War of the Worlds, their plans have been laid for the destruction of life as we know it.
Yeah.
Thanks, Bill, Mr. Stress, with a note. Give him hell, Harry. Bob. I have never run a haberdashery shop in my life, Bill. So I guess we will close out the filibobster. I've had all I can stand. I can't stand no more. Tell you what, I got real admiration for that there Ted Cruz, because after an hour and 49 minutes of nonstop talking, or nearly nonstop, I'm about halfway licked. But we'll take a break and come back. The Skype line works. Bob Kincaid Horn on Skype. Ron and Raleigh. Wait a minute. Weren't the Archons the followers of Landru? Those folks remind me of teabaggers. Peace unto you. Happiness, joy, and contentment. And peace unto you, Brother Ron. I don't know why this song comes to mind for a bumper, but by God, it did. We're listener-supported here at the Horn. And thanks again to Waggy for making this evening possible. Anybody else wants to hit the PayPal button, they are welcome to do so. Because there will, as sure as God made little green apples, be evenings we don't make the fundraising goal. And getting a little ahead would be kind of nice. Jay Cruzen dug us out of, or filled up the hole last night. Waggy made it possible to stand on level ground this evening. Someday, I want to stand on a mountain and look down at the holes. All of us do. Both the traditional mail address and the PayPal button are there at headonradionetwork.com. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Sleep. Brother's got it. like to keep you coming around. And it's usually quite loud. Our mum, she's so house proud. Nothing ever slows her down, and a mess is not allowed. Our house, in the middle of our street. Our house, in the middle of our street. Small kiss. She's the one they're going to miss in lots of ways.
Tempted for a minute there to do a full on stop set. I had one more to go, but that's like cheating. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid, and speaking of values voters, I got a note from Beth with a link. Steve Lonergan is running for Senate in New Jersey. He's running against Cory Booker. Now we all know that Cory Booker is one of those third way. Granny's not hungry enough kind of Democrats. Steve Lonergan, on the other hand, is upset that Granny's still alive, or at least drawing Social Securities. He is a values voter kind of Republican. We've been talking about the values voters, right? It's getting weird. Oh, thanks, Isaac. Isaac with a tweet. When I was an on-air personality, I used to play Our House often. So catchy. I thought Our House versus juxtaposed with the Guns of Brixton, and, you know, both with the wonderful 80s, late 70s English accents. Yeah. It just, I don't know, it made sense to me. It would have made more sense if I would have carried the stop set to its logical conclusion and played XTC doing No Thugs in Our House. Because we got a thug problem. The thugs are the fundamentalist, evangelical Christians. So, you know, there was this little kerfuffle, a couple of weeks ago, when it turned out that, gasp, Cory Booker had sent a tweet to a stripper who stripped for a vegan strip club in Oregon? Me, I just kind of blew right by it and went, well, and what? Because if it had been a Republican, A, it would not have been reported, and B, the person to whom the Republican was tweeting would have either been a gay male hooker with a good meth connection, or else it would have been, you know, the guy from Silence of the Lambs. And I'm not talking about Hannibal Lecter. I'm talking about the guy who was making a woman suit. But the for-profit media and others have not let the story go, in which Cory Booker, what did he do? He tweeted, wow, you're beautiful, you're hot, I mean, I'm just saying, or something stupid like that. So, the folks over at TPM asked a Lonergan staffer, a values voter, a upstanding, God-fearing follower of the Prince of Peace, Lonergan, they asked Rick Shaftan. Shaftan! Shut your mouth. Who is described as a senior staffer and key strategist on why it is that they think that Lonergan is gaining in the polls on Cory Booker. And Rick Shaftan said that voters would be turned off by the odd behavior, including the stripper tweet. And Shaftan went on to say that the tweet that Booker sent to the vegan stripper was strange and, quote, like what a gay guy would say. Really? It's like what a gay guy would say? Because I would have thought what a gay guy would say would be, thanks for the tweet, but I'm not into chicks. Or something like that. So, Lonergan, oh, I get it. Okay, Isaac's informing me here. Cory Booker was trying to prove with those tweets that he's not gay. Oh, okay. I'm so easily confused. But Rick Shaftan, who about 37 minutes ago said, I really shouldn't be talking anymore. And the reason he said that is because he described his feelings as follows. It was just weird. I mean, to me, you know, hey, if he said, hey, you got really hot breasts, man, I'd love to suck on them, then, like, yeah, cool. But, like, he didn't say that. It was, like, kind of like, I don't know, it was like what a gay guy would say to a stripper. It's the way he was talking to her, it was just like there was no sexual interest at all. I don't know. To me, if I was single and, you know, like some stripper was tweeting me, I might take advantage of the perks of the office, you know? I'm guessing Rick Shaftan should values voter Steve Lonergan actually make it to Washington, D.C. as a senator from New Jersey. I'm guessing Rick Shaftan won't be going with him. Yeah, okay, there's the tweet. And the East Coast loves you, and by the East Coast, I mean me. That was Booker's tweet to Lindsay Lee, the vegan stripper. And she tweeted back, well, now I'm blushing. It's only fair, Booker wrote back. This is the first mention I've made of it, and I feel icky doing it. But if you want icky, I got some icky. Icky is, it was just weird. I mean, to me, you know, like if you said, hey, you've got really hot breasts, man. She's a man, baby. You've got really hot breasts, man. I'd love to suck on them. I mean, he sounds like the adolescent duck in Duckman. Remember with Jason Alexander as the voice of Duckman? Yeah, Dodd, sure. I mean, you got really hot breasts, man. I'd love to suck on them. I mean, if I was single, you know, like some stripper was tweeting me, I might take advantage of the perks of the office, you know? What does that mean, take advantage of the perks of the office? That he'd Raper? And then Shaftan continued. It just gets better. This is strange. It's just weird. It's like, I don't know who she is. I don't know anything about her. Get the fuck out of here, dude. You can't follow her Twitter page and not know she's got those great breasts. How do you fucking not know? It's just too odd. And people, they just wonder, like, who does this guy really want to work for? Who's he representing? The people who don't objectify women for having great breasts, Mom! I mean, he's a great candidate, man. You know, when the candidate, like, says to you, Rick, grow a pair of balls, I always like to hear that because Steve, he wants to win. He doesn't personally attack Booker. It's all based on fact, you know. I mean, the pedicures? It's things Booker said. He's the one that went to Hollywood and had the fundraiser, you know. It's just like, you know, he talked about being gay or whatever. I mean, it's like, dude, you're bringing all this shit up yourself. I mean, it's like Gary Hart. Gary Hart was like, on it. Really, every time I say the word like, it's actually in the quote. Like. Gary Hart was like on his way to the nomination, and then you see this picture on the front of the National Enquirer. It's like, holy shit, what a fucking idiot. Like, what are you thinking? I've worked with people who like to have friends, you know, girlfriends and shit. But they'll never get photographed with them, you know? It's like they're very discreet and professional, you know? You kind of know, but it's not like, sit on my lap, let me eat your... Oh, my God. While you're sitting here. It's like, what the fuck, man? I don't know what this guy was thinking. I mean, you see these guys, it's like, you know, what's his name? Larry Craig's in the bathroom, it's like... What, you don't, like, think people will say, oh, I know who you are? You're, like, soliciting sex in a men's room? You're a fucking U.S. Senator, Mom. Holy shit, like, I was just tapping some music in my head. It wasn't the big head, Mom. I mean, we got all these people. They're just going to be picking up signs and putting them all over the place. They're just going to be, like, everywhere, which is exactly what we want to do. We want them everywhere. We want them, like, on every road, every place you go, you just see Lonergan signs. You know what? Booker's spending the same amount of money, I'm not making this shit up, on New York Daily News web ads. New York Daily News, which nobody fucking reads in New Jersey. He's doing web ads in a race where the median age is 65. And by the way, we're winning seniors by a significant margin right now. We're winning seniors, suburbanites, all the people that he's ignored. We're winning them all. Where are we in the home stretch? Surging. And remember, this guy is the chief political strategist of a Christian. And not just a Christian, a Bible-believing Christian with a personal relationship with the Lord Jesus Christ. Rick Shaftan is now, you know, like, apologizing, like, you know, I shouldn't be talking anymore. I shouldn't mouth off like that. It's not representative of Lonergan. It's representative of Rick Shaftan. And here's the fun part. You know what happens now? Nothing. Nothing. Because, see, that's the beautiful part of being a fundamentalist evangelical Christian. Because all you have to do is say, well, like, you know, I took it to the Lord in prayer, and, like, the Lord said, yeah, shit, dude, it's not like I never said anything. I mean, what? I mean, was I perfect? And I said, well, Lord, And, oh, no, no, it's all right. It's all right, Shaftan, Rick. It's okay, like, you know, I got crucified and went to hell for you for 3 days. And, like, that allows me to forgive you when you go off on these misogynistic, sexist rants that you do because, well, you know, I understand that. So, like, you're forgiven, you know? Our buddy, the angry Indian, noting. Let's see. Booker's bad if he's gay. He's bad if he texts strippers. Both things Republicans do behind closed doors. Bordellos and, you know, small-scale gay pubs. Oh, like, oh, is that a gay pub? Oh, like, shit, I had no idea. Oh, was that dude hitting on me? I thought he was just buying me a beer. I'm sorry. I'll quit. I can't. I love doing that voice. Oh, really, dude? Oh. Ah. Really. Sometimes it's just hard to pass those things up. Oh, by the way, we were talking about more and nastier pipelines. You caught this yesterday evening, I trust. Up in northwestern North Dakota. Hi, Gunny Bob! They had a little oil pipeline problem. Now, here it is, the 11th day of October. Your big 10-1-1, 10-4. And we found, I guess yesterday, the Associated Press reported that lo and behold, there was a 20,600 barrel of crude oil spill into a wheat field in North Dakota. Discovered September 29th by a farmer harvesting wheat. State environmental geologist Chris Roberts told the Associated Press, the farmer was harvesting his wheat and started smelling oil. It went from there. No, I think the oil went from the pipeline, didn't it? And, of course, the oil company Fit First said, ah, you know, it's not a big spill. It's just 750 barrels. And so then the whatever passes for a State Department of Environmental Protection in North Dakota said, oh, really? It's just 750 barrels? Throw a match on it, would you? Which they then did. No, really, that's how you get rid of spilled oil in North Dakota in 2013 when every last bit of CO2 generated freaking matters. Oh, it's just 750 miles. Burn it. So it turns out, really, it wasn't 750 barrels. It was 20,600. They were off by about 20,000 barrels. What's 20,000 barrels of crude among friends, honestly, really? Of course, they only found it out after the match had been thrown. This is the oil industry that we're supposed to trust to build the Keystone XL pipeline. And this isn't tar sands oil. This is, sweet crude? Makes it sound like you can put it on pancakes? Sweet crude. Mm-mm, yummy. And they can't even seem to get that across a wheat field. I'm not talking about crossing a mountain range or bifurcating an entire continent. They can't get it across a wheat field without spilling. Oh, it's just 750. All right, it's 20,600 barrels. But we burned it. Reuters said it was the biggest oil spill in North Dakota since 1 million barrels of saltwater brine, a byproduct of oil production, leaked from a well site in 2006. North Dakota. Great place. And it is. The North Dakota pipeline was carrying oil from the Bakken Shale Formation, where oil and gas production is booming and predicted to increase. Companies, by the way, are quickly running out of pipelines to transport their product to refiners and are pushing for a rapid expansion of their pipeline network. Who? Meanwhile, the folks over at the Pipeline Safety Trust said that both federal regulations and inspections are way behind the expansion of the pipelines. And that's what makes it possible to, that's 750 barrels. We caught it pretty quick. I mean, yeah, you can get 750 barrels out of a pipeline like that. I mean, it's like a drop. And here's the fun part from the Reuters article. Quote, the regional EPA office could not be reached because of the government shutdown. See, it's not all bad news out of the shutdown. That's good for the free market, isn't it? I keep getting the idea that this play does not end well. I mean, Hamlet's bad enough where the only person alive left on stage is the king of Norway. This is kind of worse. We're all Hamlet now, right? And by the way, additional funds for the Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, already hacked at by the House and the Senate, expires in 3 weeks. Just shortly before Thanksgiving. Back in 2009, the maximum allowable SNAP benefit was raised in order to protect needy families and boost economic activity in the midst of the economic crisis. Well, that runs out in 3 weeks. So the poors get some food taken away. Freedom! Wolverines! The cut is somewhere between $36 a month for a family of four to $11 a month for a single person. And an amount of money that is already not particularly large. Eat. Eat up, me hearties. Note coming from Harry, who, I take it, Harry's able to listen live this evening. Hey, Harry. In these times, I am reminded of General Smedley Butler, whether he was engaging in fiction or nonfiction. I'm not one to indulge in loopy conspiracy theories, whether new or 70 years old. But I cannot get the story of Marine Major Smedley Butler out of my mind when I think about the Tea Party and their billionaire supporters. Although Major General Butler, prior to his testimony before a congressional committee in 1934 about a coup to overthrow FDR, was apparently widely considered a man of great integrity and was, in fact, a war hero who won two Congressional Medals of Honor, his congressional testimony was dismissed, discounted, and allegedly suppressed at the time, even by the august New York Times. Many politicians dismissed his story as a fairy tale or as simply not credible, but others have continued to pursue the story to see if, in fact, what Butler alleged had any truth in it. Harry reminds us that Smedley Butler himself actually wrote a book. It was published in 1935. It was called War is a Racket. And he was also quoted in a socialist newspaper, Common Sense, in 1935 as saying, "I helped make Mexico, and especially Tampico, safe for American oil interests in 1914. I helped make Haiti and Cuba a decent place for the National City Bank boys to collect revenues in. I helped in the raping of half a dozen Central American republics for the benefit of Wall Street." The record of racketeering is long. I helped purify Nicaragua for the international banking house of Brown Brothers in 1909 to 1912. Oh, I'll be damned. Brown Brothers. I'd forgotten about that part. Brown Brothers. They would go on to be, they'd have a little name change, and in a few decades they would be known as Brown Brothers Harriman, and they would have a young princeling of the up east elite by the name of Prescott Bush on their board of directors, helping to funnel monies and sort of launder monies for a German industrialist by the name of Fritz Thyssen. Over in Germany, they just called him Hitler's angel. Yeah, that's how the Bush family came to get busted under the Trading with the Enemy Act in 1943, and how a young first baseman for the Yale Bulldogs by the name of George H.W. Bush came to be the youngest pilot, youngest cadet admitted to naval pilot training. And among the worst, you'd be hard pressed to say there was a worse naval aircraft carrier pilot in the ranks of the U.S. Navy until one John McCain would come along. George H.W. Bush was so bad that he was not actually allowed to fly with explosives on his aircraft. Instead, he flew with cameras and still managed to get his ass shot down. Anyway, Smedley Butler said in Harry's note, "I helped purify Nicaragua for the international banking house of Brown Brothers in 1909 to 1912. I brought light to the Dominican Republic for American sugar interests in 1916. I helped make Honduras right for American fruit companies in 1903. In China in 1927, I helped see to it that Standard Oil went its way unmolested." Looking back on it, I felt I might have given Al Capone a few hints. The best he could do was to operate his racket in three city districts. We Marines operated on three continents. Harry observes, "So Butler was, it seems, not a complete fool when it came to knowing what he had done in the Marines. Here below is a description of the outline of the alleged plot from the website of a 2007 BBC investigative program that took another look into General Butler's testimony that a group of right-wing industrialists wanted him, Butler, to lead a coup to overthrow FDR. Harry says, Harry provides the copy from the BBC. BBC, Bush's grandfather planned fascist coup in America. A BBC Radio 4 investigation sheds new light on a major subject that has received little historical attention. The conspiracy on behalf of a group of influential power brokers led by Prescott Bush to overthrow FDR and implement a fascist dictatorship in the U.S. based around the ideology of Mussolini and Hitler. In 1933, Marine Corps Major General Smedley Butler was approached by a wealthy and secretive group of industrialists and bankers, including Prescott Bush, the current president's grandfather. Again, this is from several years ago, 2007, who asked him to command a 500,000-strong rogue army of veterans that would help stage a coup to topple then-President Franklin Delano Roosevelt. Now, understand, it says 1933 when this approach was made. Roosevelt had hardly warmed the desk chair in the Oval Office at the time. Because remember, he was elected in the 1932 November general election and didn't take office until what? March 1933? According to the BBC, the plotters intended to impose a fascist takeover and adopt the policies of Hitler and Mussolini to beat the Great Depression. The conspirators were operating under the umbrella of a front group called the American Liberty League, Well, I'll be damned. There's that liberty again, as a cover for fascism. Nothing changes. Which included many families that are still household names today, including Heinz, Colgate, Birdseye, and General Motors. Butler played along with the clique to determine who was involved, but later blew the whistle and identified the ringleaders in testimony given to the House Committee on Un-American Activities. But the committee refused to even question any of the individuals named by Butler, and his testimony was omitted from the record, leading to charges that they were involved in covering the matter up, and the majority of the media blackballed the story. It's a true story. It holds up. Back when the story was fresh, do you recall any major exposés? On ABC, CBS, NBC, at all? Yeah, me neither. And the upshot of all of this is that Harry says, you may not wish to read this, or even mention it on the air, but this is what I am personally reminded of when I hear speeches by Ted Cruz, or Mike Lee, or Mark Levin. And the reason you're reminded of that, Harry, is because, like Gertrude Stein said about roses, a fascist is a fascist is a fascist is a fascist. It's that simple. Ron and Raleigh noting, I've been looking for it, but I can't find my recipe for stone soup. Can't afford much else. I remember having that story read to me, I think on Captain Kangaroo when I was a kid. I thought it was a wonderful story. And it was a children's story. And the meaning was not lost on me. A guy shows up in a poor village with a pot. And the people ask him what he's going to do with the pot, and he says, I'm going to make stone soup. All I need is a few stones. And lo and behold, he's got his stones together. And somebody says, you know, never had stone soup, but I can't help thinking it'd probably be better with some onions. Here's some onions. And somebody else says, well, you know, onions in stone soup are probably good oniony flavor, but how about some potatoes? And somebody else offers some carrots. And the next thing you know, in this poor village, you've got a bubbling cauldron of delightful soup. That, of course, is communism. Kevin with an email. My shutdown story so far, food stamps. Bob, didn't get my food stamps this month, which is a good thing, since I have decided not to eat during this shutdown, except for the two pieces of toast or Pop-Tarts I have to take one of my medicines. I'm pissed off, and this is my way of showing it. If this shutdown goes on much longer, yes, I expect adverse effects to my health, but if so, perhaps this is a way to show some of my religious and Republican family and friends that, yes, there are real people affected by this shutdown, and that my commitment to these people is real. Don't know any better way to make this statement right now, given everything else. Thanks, Kevin. It's a noble sentiment, Kevin. But it is worth remembering that the Repiglicans out there would prefer that you starve. Hence, I say, eat as best you can, just to spite the bastards. Here it is, 8:30 p.m. in the Eastern Time Zone. 30 minutes to go in the program, and let's have us some Friday on the front porch. Duncan has the gang ready to roll over in the Skype group. Duncan's there. Mr. Gibson is there. Larry's there. Jay Cruzen's there. And Sergi's there. Hey, guys.
Hey, Bob.
How you doing?
Hey, Bob. Sorry we're late.
I guess I'm here, too.
Yeah, I said Larry's there.
Greetings.
And hallucinations.
Yeah, and better days in the past, yeah.
I'm glad we got to get a little bit of front porch in one way or the other, because I've become rather fond of this this little experiment we have, and I'm glad you could make it in. Anybody bringing anything to the table? I mean, not like stone soup or anything. Anybody got a burr under their saddle, bee under their bonnet?
I have one under mine.
You pretty much covered it for the night.
Sergio, you said you got something bugging you? Wow, what was that?
Yes, I do. And I do apologize.
That was a can of something.
I thought the closing music was about to start because that begins with a can popping, but no, that wasn't the truckers. No, go ahead, Sergio.
And I do apologize for all the background noise. I am at a McDonald's right now having to use the internet because district-wide across the Morningside district here in Fort Worth right now, the internet's on the fritz. So we can pour all these billions of dollars into the military-industrial complex, but when it comes to decent internet infrastructure that won't take an entire part of a major city offline, yeah, we can't do that now, can we? That'd be socialism.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. But, hey, you know, you're at the home of the 99-cent menu. This is where America is expected to eat hearty now, Sergi.
Yeah, well, I just came here to use the internet. I bought a $1 drink. And that's
well, that's enough to keep your seat.
Did you see what I posted in the chat room about Arizona and New York getting their the Grand Canyon open and the Statue of Liberty open again?
No. I think that may have been when I had been timed out.
Oh, well, anyway, the state's going to pay for it or for the whatever it costs to get them open again.
Well, there was a story a couple of weeks back, Duncan, about old hatchet-faced Governor Jan Brewer saying she, because in the last shutdown, some wealthy Arizonan had paid out of his own pocket to keep the Grand Canyon open. And hatchet-faced Brewer said, I don't know if the Grand Canyon is one of our priorities right now. But what I find interesting out of it, I mean, I think it's good that landmarks like the Statue of Liberty and the Grand Canyon be open. But what I'm waiting, and it's good that there was a private foundation that stepped up to help the families of the soldiers killed in our ongoing illegal war in Afghanistan. That's all well and good. But by the same token, where's the wealthy industrialist who's going to step up to make sure that people don't get their food stamps cut by somewhere between $11 and $36?
I got a little good news from North Carolina, Stan.
Oh, yeah?
Somehow or another, the Health and Human Services Agency has found a way to keep WIC going.
Well, it will.
WIC got cut off. And I actually, my sister-in-law gets WIC, and she was cut off, and they're going to start it back. I don't know how. I don't have the details.
Well, it'll be great if that can happen. The stories I was reading about WIC said that the downstream effects would hit WIC harder the longer the shutdown went on. So apparently they've begun to kick in a place like North Carolina. But it's worth understanding and considering and remembering that having WIC fall apart doesn't matter to a bunch of Republicans because they hate the idea of WIC in the first place. That prattling, unindicted, probably homicidal maniac, Joe Scarborough was babbling either this morning or yesterday morning or sometime about how government runs these programs, but of course the church can always do that better. And I was, you know, really, I mean, I know the churches are sitting on a lot of tax-free money, but I don't think even the churches in this country have enough money to keep people fed day in and day out and year in, month in and month out, do they?
No, not with voluntary contributions. Not when you have a situation where anybody can give whatever, you know, whatever little bit or whatever, however much that they want to give. People don't have to give a uniform amount. That's voluntary. You know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
And if, and And if these Republicans hate poor people so much, don't they realize that by cutting off the WIC and cutting off public services, they're going to make a lot more? They'd be a lot, if they really hate poor people, they'd be doing a lot better if they did something to help them. Then they wouldn't be poor anymore. Well, that doesn't make sense. I know I'm not making sense.
No,
but
you
know
where
I'm pulling this.
Larry, remember what right wingers and birthers and deathers and tenthers and birchers and booger eaters think. We can go back to that clip that we had so much fun with a few weeks ago, where Louis Gohmert was having a conniption on the floor of the House, talking about how all those worthless poor people were eating up all the Alaskan king crab legs. The right wing were pig lickins, and the birthers, deathers, baggers, tenthers, birchers, and booger eaters think that people are poor because they're a bunch of freeloaders who just want to eat better. But that's why they go through the indignity, and there is a hell of a lot of indignity involved in signing up for food stamps. And you have
it
to
actually is.
Yeah. And you have to show up periodically and show them that you still need to eat food, and that you haven't won the lottery or somehow become inexplicably rich and are just using food stamps because you're too cheap with your winnings to go and buy food with them. It's an incredibly undignified process. The only thing it's less undignified than is having to go with your hat in your hand to some gospel mill in order to get a bowl of beans.
Well, Bob, anybody who is on a government program, whatever government program, and they're asking for money, they always have you run through the mill because they don't trust you. But yet the government lets all these large companies get away with getting whatever corporate welfare that they get, but they don't call it corporate welfare, they call it a subsidy.
Right.
I mean, you know what I'm saying. It's perfectly okay for some oil company to get a subsidy because, after all, there are more people that are dependent upon that oil company. It's a lot easier to pick off some individual poor person because you can see them. But God forbid we should take the oil companies and the corporate people off of their subsidy, because that means a whole lot of people would be out of work and they'd have a lot more problems politically. So it's easier for them politically to pick off the people that aren't part of the system than it is to pick off people that are part of it. Anyway, let me let you go.
No, I understand, Larry.
Riff for 1 second there on the churches, too, and their voluntary donations or whatever they have.
Yeah, jump in.
If you notice, the churches that get the biggest voluntary donations have the biggest facilities, and their preachers live in the biggest mansions. So it just goes to show how much better the church can do than the government, right?
Well, absolutely. Yeah. And the other night we had that ranting of what was his name, Rot Hudson or whatever his name was, screaming about pink is for girls and blue is for boys. Now you could hide the sun's you could hide the light of the sun behind this guy, okay? And I'll never. Sandra tweeted in and said, "This guy looks like a thumb." I had to struggle and he does. And you can tell this guy, and it's not because he's big-boned or anything, this guy hasn't missed a meal probably since the Carter administration or before, if ever. So I don't know, I don't know how they're going to feed the poor when they're feeding the Hagees and the Hudsons of the world.
Is this a no-necker?
You couldn't find it with a sword, Duncan.
No neck, no knees, cankles, all that stuff, right?
Precisely.
Well, I'm not going to bust all the churches, even though you know how anti-religion I am. But some of the smaller ones actually do the most good.
Well, yeah, and I'm not trying to bust on them all either, but They do have this nasty tendency to want you to pray with them, believe like they do, and if you don't, no beans. And it's beans and stone soup and prison cheese. But the fact of the matter is, there are not enough. There are, I mean, it's math, and you guys are better at this than I am. It's math. There are not enough churches, and there is not enough money to feed America's hungry out of the purse of the church. But the right wing lives in this fantasy world, guys, where sure, yeah, the church can do it better. And, you know, a little hunger, that builds character. Remember when Rush Limbaugh said, why haven't poor children learned to dumpster dive?
I got to tell you something, Bob. When I was feeling bad...
Have you ever dumpster dived?
Me? No.
No.
Well, I got to tell you something. My brother...
I have, but not for food.
Said to me once when I was younger, he said, maybe, Larry, if you weren't on SSI and you weren't on SSDI, maybe that would be better for you, because he had the attitude at one point that these people that want to do social welfare are harming the very people that they purport to want to help. I don't know where that logic comes from, but that's what... He doesn't say it now, but he said it then, which didn't really help.
But this is typical, Larry. Because the right wingers, and especially the religious ones, think that you know what hunger is proof that you are somehow displeasing their God, and that if you would quit doing whatever it is you're doing wrong, God would favor you with more food than you could ever eat, Rolls Royces, jet airplanes. I mean, that's the heart and soul of the so-called prosperity gospel, as preached by Creflo Dollar and Kenneth Copeland and Joyce Meyer. Is it Joyce Meyer? And all of those creepy hucksters and hustlers.
Everybody but by whom they declare their religion came from, which was Christ, which whether or not he was here or not, it doesn't matter.
And I hate to admit that I know enough about it to read it, but there is a segment now on Morning Joe called Faith on Fridays. And lo and behold, they trotted out Billy Graham's grandson today. Who you remember that hateful old preacher down in Florida? He ran. It's called the Coral Ridge Ministries, but I called it the Coral Snake Ministries. And they were virulently anti-gay and all of that stuff. Well, this guy has succeeded to that guy's post as pastor, since the other guy like got cancer and God didn't heal it and called him home. Well, he's got, you know, once again, they're always there hustling some book, and it's about love, and I thought I was going to retch, because if your net worth is higher than that of, you know, a mid-level worker, and you're a preacher, you really can't talk about anybody else's lives, because you don't have any fundamental understanding of them. That was what Yeshua, the brown-skinned Palestinian day laborer, was talking about when he said it was easier for a fat man to go through the eye of a needle than to enter the kingdom of heaven. What he was saying is the rich have no real appreciation, no way of understanding what it is the struggling masses go through every day. They simply do not have a frame of reference. They have no way of conceptualizing it. And that's the way it is with these values voters. There weren't any hungry values voters out there. And I'm sure there was plenty of coffee and donuts outside the meeting room. They weren't hungry. They won't ever be hungry. They don't know hunger, because they've got the system beat. I mean, if you can afford to travel to the values voter summit, you have some throwaway cash, right? Fair to say?
That's fair to say.
So, you know, how do you have anything in common with, you know, with struggling humanity? By the way, hey, Sandiant, saw you entered the room, too.
Yeah, hello there, Bob.
How's it going?
Oh, not too bad.
Cool.
Sleeping on a cot tonight.
well, I saw you wander in, and, you know, I'm such a simpleton. I'm sitting here waving at the computer that has the Skype on it. I don't know. It's the end of the week. I may be a little bit scorched at this point. So, yeah, my apologies if I am.
Hey, Bob.
Yeah.
This is Grant.
Yeah.
You know, that what you're talking about really touches on something Chris Hedges was going after the Green Party about. He was telling them, look, unless you are engaged in some kind of sort of material support for the public at large, you know, be it, you know, food programs or financial shelters, or unless you're doing something like that, you're running the risk of going along into the sort of, you know, what the Democrats have done. They have a little club where they pimp the poor, but they don't like the smell of the poor, you know. And I think it's a well-placed sort of sermon, Chris Hedges' sermon, about staying street immediate to, you know, the electorate and assisting those who are downtrodden, be, you know, and have active programs. I mean, one of the things that makes me look upon the Black Panthers so fondly is not the gangsters at the top, but the people who are doing the, you know, the real work at the bottom. Setting up the school, setting up the lunch counters, setting up, you know what I'm saying, the clothing handouts, the real social welfare type of programs. And that's just what something that sprung to mind as you mentioned these churches and stuff. I mean, yeah, it's kind of scary. I mean, I had to go through one of those churches once for a place to stay at night, and it's kind of a tense place. There's a lot of judging going on in these places, and no matter what they are, I concur, they do not have the resources to tackle the problem. But you know what? If it's somebody who's got the system beat, and they they're never going hungry, but they're making decisions. There's no wonder in my mind why you've got a system so cockeyed and unable to deal with the crisis.
I agree wholeheartedly, Grant. And like you said, it's a stressful, tense place because A, nobody wants to be there, and B, nobody's comfortable there, which is kind of odd considering that this is supposed to be, you know, grace and love based. On the other hand, what you're talking about, what you started out talking about, is the and I think Chris Hedges has a valid point. The reason that people don't hate Hezbollah, the reason that people don't hate Al-Qaeda or whatever group we're is because the first thing they do is they start feeding people and they start taking care of people, and they'll mix some propaganda in with the beans, but the beans are what matters at that point. And it's not the same thing as some sort of missionary soup kitchen. And no, the Democrats will put on their bean dinner, and here in a couple of weeks, I guess, if they haven't already had it, the Democratic Party in West Virginia will have their Jefferson Jackson Day dinner. I do wish they could get Jackson out of there. Hell, I wish they could get Jefferson out of there and just call it the FDR Day dinner.
Does that mean Andrew Jackson?
Yeah.
Oh, God, have I heard some horrible things about Andrew Jackson based upon how he treated the Native Americans.
He was a genocidalist. There's no getting around it. But, you know, and that'll be where the swells come in to eat rubber chicken and hear a bad speech. And the Republicans had their Lincoln Day dinner. But, and remember, all of these both of these political parties are, by definition, nonprofits. And as such, they're charities. And yet none of that goes to do any social good whatsoever. So it's a compromised system with next to no real appreciable values, as far as I'm concerned.
The only one I've ever been to that's really good, and I guess I have to confess my wife's religious beliefs here, is the church my wife goes to in North Carolina. They do Wednesday night meals, and paying is an option. Anybody who wants to show up and eat can eat. But you give $3 or $4, and you get a plate of food that you and two other people couldn't eat. And it's good home southern cooking. But if you can't pay, you don't pay.
Well, the little church I grew up, well, it was a fairly big church, but they did the same thing. Went and it was right before Wednesday night prayer meeting. And that's why the references on Wednesday nights, the deacons fending off the little children trying to get a slice of pie. I've seen that happen.
Yeah, well, at least they don't have to go to the prayer meeting, though. Just come get it and leave.
Yeah.
That's pretty good. It's the only one I've ever seen like that, though.
No, you could even get to go. I mean, you could even get a to-go box down the basement of the Baptist church. It was pretty interesting. But again, that's one evening. What do you do about Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday?
Cat food.
Actually, I got straightened up on that. Humans can't eat cat food, but we can get by on dog food. Just
wait a minute. Humans can't eat cat food.
Yeah, the digestive tract won't handle it because it's got a certain amount of ash in it.
Oh. Okay.
Damn, there goes my retirement plans.
I'll see. Well, but as Kate has informed us on a number of occasions, canned mackerel is actually cheaper. And if you can crumble up some saltines and to stretch it a little bit, maybe chop up an onion if you can afford an onion. Well, by God, then you can have fried and you've got something to cook it on and over. Then you've got fried mackerel patties, and damned if those aren't good.
Do you have grocery outlets back there?
Not sure. I'm guessing not, because I'm not quite sure what you're talking about, Duncan.
Oh, it's like a 98-cent store for dented cans, that kind of shit.
No, I don't think I've seen one of those.
We call it, down over in Oregon, we call it the broken food store.
you mean like grocery outlet, those places?
They're all over California, Larry.
Yeah, I think we got one where I am, way down.
We used to have one in North Carolina. It was called Save-A-Ton.
Now, we've got Save-A-Lots around here, but I don't think that's quite the same thing.
They got all the cheap stuff, ramen noodles, all that stuff. And
oh yeah, I used to swear by that place. You know, when I was living out of my van. You know, it's a great place. You pick up some wheat tortillas and a nice block of Tillamook cheese, and you know you're set for 3 days. It's great.
Mm-hmm.
Quesadillas, here we come.
Basically, yeah.
Would it be fair to say that everybody in here has at least experienced the choice of buying food for the family or paying a bill?
Oh, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. See, do you think that there should be anybody allowed to represent us that hasn't experienced that?
I think it should be a requirement, but
that scientific literacy, please.
Exactly what I was getting at.
Yeah, that and scientific literacy. I think Grant's got a point there, too.
I wish I could be represented by somebody like that. But no, I'm represented by a rice farmer that's been a government servant now for over 10 years and went in the state and went to Congress and has got almost $5 million in farm subsidies.
Yeah, and by rice farmer, you don't mean a guy with a paddy out in the back. How many bajillion? Well, how many bajillion acres is he farming?
I don't know, but you go down the valley and you see all the rice farms are huge.
Is this like those Lundgren farms? Is it Lundgren's that I see out of California? Because they're the ones, and they had the organics and stuff, and they were the ones that actually openly addressed what was it—the mercury problem, the arsenic problem in rice.
You were talking about the Lundberg.
Lundberg.
They did rice cakes and all that stuff. I don't know, you know, I don't buy rice cakes anymore. I can't answer that question. Can anybody answer that?
No, I've just, my congressman's name is Doug LaMoffa. He replaced Wally Herger in the last election.
You know, a lot of these congressmen, they just got like 100 acres and they throw two cows on it and they say they're a cattle farmer and they draw government subsidies.
Oh, yeah. That's basically what that one con artist in the teabagger con artist in Tennessee has going for him.
Well, I had a real encounter with a real cow the other night.
Yeah, what was that?
She was trying to get through the fence to eat the acorns. Big old black Angus cow, and she's right up against our back fence, butts up against the pasture for the cattle ranch. And there's usually three, there's like hog wire on the bottom, and then three strands of barbed wire. Well, she'd broken through one strand, and she was kind of kneeling down and bending down the hog wire, and she was reaching out as far as she could into the yard to eat acorns.
So did you shovel a few acorns toward her, Duncan?
Well, I got a ton of them this year, but I mean... No, I did. Reading up later, acorns are really bad if they eat a lot of them, can make them sick.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
So, after I read up, but no, I just tried to get her out of the damn fence and get her away. And then I I went out there and I yelled and screamed at the rancher when he was out and about running around, and I waved my arms, and he finally saw me and run out there on his four-wheeler. Because the pasture is like over 500 yards long, I just estimating, to the ranch house where I can see him. So he come over and I told him what was going on. Then he got his ranch truck out there a little later and he put a couple more strands of barbed wire on the fence because he don't want him eating the acorns. But underneath that big old oak tree, it's a valley oak. It's like 75 to 100 years old. It's been just dropping tons of acorns, and every place where they get under there for shade when it's hot, but there ain't an acorn one underneath that tree. They've ate them all.
So do you have much in the way of deer there? Because deer go crazy. Well, deer and wild turkeys too.
Well, yeah, up in the foothills, there's a lot of wild turkeys.
Irish Dave pointing out that acorns often commit voter fraud too. Also,
yeah, my stepson was here today, and we went up to Home Depot, and there's this one place down by the river. He was asking me, "The deer still come down there?" And I go, "Well, I haven't seen them in a couple of years, but they did have a mountain lion sighting down there a couple of years ago, so that may have chased the deer away."
Yeah, it might explain the absence of the deer. Well, guys, I'm sorry we got to it so late, but we found ourselves at the end of the program. So, Duncan, with Malloy being a rerun, is it still Horn Malloy Skype chat group kicking off at 12:05 Eastern time?
Yeah, sometimes we do it earlier.
Okay. Well, anybody that wants to, jump on over that way. Thanks, guys, and have a great weekend.
Okay, thanks. You too, Bob. It's Thanksgiving here in Canada.
Oh, happy Thanksgiving, Steve.
Thanks.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Bye now.
Thank you.
And that's the merry band of the Horn Malloy Skype chat group for this Friday on the Front Porch. Time to get out of here. I've let the time get away from me. Trying to sort out the phones issue. Hopefully they will be sorted out sooner rather than later. I don't know what to tell you. But thanks. Thanks to everybody who makes all of this go, and anybody who wants to help get ahead of next week via the PayPal button, you are more than welcome and most encouraged and much appreciated when you do so. Thanks a bunch. Have a great weekend. We'll talk soon. Bye now. Hey, here comes Rick Smith.